But it's a symbolic meeting, and it's really about the demands of Canadian people that our government show some sympathy with the plight of Tibetans in Tibet. I don't think that there will be much in the way of substantive discussions between the Dalai Lama and Mr. Martin, but just meeting is enough.
But if there is this will to send a signal, then why not make it a political meeting rather than a meeting with the spiritual leader? Why not signify that that's what's going on?
Well, I think that if we suggested that the Dalai Lama is a political leader, in other words, someone that has a legitimate political role to play in Tibet and not as a leader of the religion there, that this would, in fact, send out a signal that would be quite different from established Canadian policy, because we do not challenge the Chinese claim to sovereignty over Tibet, and we have not gone on record as supporting the aspirations of Tibetans towards an independent state. So, you know, so he's going through a rather delicate dance. And this kind of fiction that he's meeting the Dalai Lama to discuss spiritual matters alone is the same one as Mr. Blair of England used when he met with the Dalai Lama. But when Mr. Bush, the American president, met with the Dalai Lama, he didn't give any explanation of what capacity the Dalai Lama would be assuming when the meeting took place.
But hasn't the Dalai Lama himself stopped trying to actively fight against the occupation? Hasn't he also changed his rhetoric regarding Tibet's relationship with China?
Well, I think that the Dalai Lama's statements indicate that he would like Tibet to be a genuinely autonomous region where Tibetans are in charge of domestic affairs in Tibet, but that this does not mean that Tibet would become an independent nation with its own seat in the UN, that the Chinese would continue to be responsible for foreign policy and defense. And so this is simply a matter of asking the Chinese to give the Tibetans what is guaranteed in the Chinese constitution with regard to autonomous regions. The Chinese are not having any part of this and say that this is simply a device for him to further the end of Tibetan splitism, as they put it, which would be the sovereignty of Tibet as an independent nation.
We're actually seeing almost the opposite happen with Hong Kong now, too, aren't we, in terms of the Chinese, the unwillingness of China to extend some of the guarantees that they made in the charter with Hong Kong.
Well, yes, the agreement that was made with Britain with regard to Hong Kong provided certain rights to Hong Kong to determine its own political system, and China has decided through its National People's Congress that the ultimate determiner of what sorts of political changes will happen in Hong Kong will rest with the National People's Congress in Beijing. I think that it's a slightly different issue in the sense that if there was local democracy in Hong Kong, this could hasten demands for the same thing in other parts of China, whereas the Tibetan, the hard line on Tibet is related to China's desire to maintain Tibet, but also because there are many other parts of China that are seeking to become independent from the rule of Beijing, or at least there are movements within these places that want that. You know, the people in the Inner Mongolian Autonomous Region, many of the Mongolians might like that to be grafted onto Outer Mongolia to form a new Mongolian state. And then there's the Taiwan situation, where there's a strong independentist movement there that Taiwan should not be a province of China but an independent republic. And then there's the Uyghur Autonomous Region in the northwest, the Xinjiang, where there are a number of Uyghurs that would like to form a new state called Greater Turkestan, which would also not be under Beijing sovereignty. So they've got a series of these going on. And I guess if they showed flexibility on one, it would encourage the independentists and the others to try and push Beijing to further concessions.
But the people of Mongolia or Taiwan or even Hong Kong don't have this sort of peripatetic figure that is the Dalai Lama, who has this extraordinary grace and also has followers outside of the territory that he represents. So what does that do, or what advantage does that give to people who are interested in getting some autonomy for Tibet, for the Tibetans themselves?
Well, I don't think that there's much prospect of any change in the status quo with regard to political arrangements in Tibet in the near future, because China is a very strong nation, and they regard Tibet as an integral part of their territory, and I think that the Chinese people as a whole also support that Tibet is part of China, just as, you know, we say our Canada includes Quebec. Mm-hmm. And so the Tibetans within Tibet are a relatively weak political force because they're mostly relatively uneducated people who don't have a consciousness of themselves as citizens with inherent rights, including the right to self-determination. And so, from that point of view, and because the people abroad, you know, the different supporters of the Dalai Lama, many of them Hollywood stars and that sort of thing, or Tibetan communities abroad, really are not players in the issue.
What do you expect will be discussed at the meeting between the Prime Minister and the Dalai Lama?
I don't think that there will be much beyond the exchange of mutual expressions of respect and goodwill. I don't think that there are any substantive issues on the table. The Tibetan-Canada Committee does have a notion that Canada could play a brokering role in negotiations between the People's Republic of China and the Tibetan government in exile in India, but I don't think that that this is likely to come to pass. I don't think the Chinese would welcome us to participate in what they regard as an internal domestic affair.
Do you expect that there'll be any repercussions as China has seemed to have hinted an economic reprisal for this meeting?
I hope not. I don't expect that we would be in. That economic sanctions would take place. There are other things that they can do to express their displeasure. For example, they might interfere with our ongoing aid program in the Tibetan Autonomous Region, where we are helping out with poverty alleviation and improving the productivity of their agricultural areas, and so they might cease to give permissions for us to carry on with those sorts of things. But that's speculation on my part, and I'm sincerely hoping that China will take a big-spirited look at this and that we'll be able to continue to build our relations as we've been doing over the past years.
Professor Burton, thanks for being our guest today.
Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well.
Bye.
Charles Burton is a professor in political science at Brock University. He worked as a counselor in political and economic affairs for the Canadian Embassy in Beijing for several years. This is All in a Day on Radio 1. I'm Brent Bambury. It's 5:30.